We shall see. We shall see.
Hey, everybody. This is Guy Weddle. I'm here with our guest tonight, Brent Oldman, who is the author of Children of the Greys. How you doing, Brent?
Doing great. How you doing tonight, Guy?
Oh, not too bad. Apologize, my co-host, Sasha. She had some issues she has to deal with tonight, personal, so it's just going to be me and my big fat mouth.
We'll make it work.
Yeah. So, why don't you, Brett, why don't you give everybody a small background on when things started with you?
It started when I was 5 years old in southern Illinois. I lived on a farm, actually. Pretty much out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by soybean and cornfields, and my family lived in an old two-story farmhouse. And in the wintertime, my mom and stepdad would block off the upstairs and kind of move the kids downstairs to sleep to save on the heating and everything. So my brother and I were put on a kind of just like pallets on the floor, really. My sister got to sleep on the sofa. And we all slept in the living room for the 3 or 4 months during the winter. And it had started to get cold. It was late fall. And so they had moved us down there. And I was awakened one night. I started hearing like this voice kind of calling to me. And I opened my eyes and I saw this very bright light coming through the side window, which I couldn't figure out because, you know, this is an area where there's no street lights or anything like that. I mean, it's just the ambient light, natural ambient light was all there was. And I kept hearing this voice coaxing me to come to the window. So just a curious little boy, I got up and I really wasn't afraid at that point. I was just more curious than anything, and it was very quiet in the house and kind of rather chilly, actually. And I got up and I walked to the front window instead of the side window where the light was the brightest. And we had these white kind of thin wispy curtains. And I just walked up to the window and took my right hand and pulled the curtains back. And as I did, I came face to face with a creature that I had never seen before. I had no way to comprehend, even rationalize what I was looking at. And it was a gray, your typical gray, and it was just directly, I mean, a foot and a half in front of me. And that image actually stuck in my psyche so much that I had nightmares really all the way to the present time. Of that first experience. And there was two more of them standing out in the yard by the front tree in our yard. And I just remember like blacking out at that time. And when I woke up, you know, they had me on the examining table and I was just going hysterical, and they were using their mental techniques to calm me down. And they ended up taking me to a room where there were sort of these, like different level of bench like seats in different levels, and there was a tall gray in there. And I'm sure most of your listeners are aware that, and if they're not, then I will say my opinion on it, that the tall grays are definitely the leader, the ones in charge, and they kind of did the good cop, bad cop thing. You know, I mean, they used the tall one. He reassured me that he was my friend and no one was going to hurt me and he would protect me. And he told me a lot of real reassuring statements like that and kind of got me calmed down. And when you're a child, you have nothing to grasp onto except whoever was offering you that kind of safety. And I really, you know, I'd never been exposed to comic books. We had an old black and white TV. I'd never seen anything about aliens. I was very, very shielded. We lived in an area where I hadn't even seen people of other colors, let alone aliens. I couldn't understand who these things were, what they were. They just looked like hideous, large insects to me at the time. And I kind of latched on to the tall one at that time, and really all through the years, which is decades now, he has still been the one who I feel the most comfortable with, even though they did horrific things to me and subjected me to things I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. He's never been the one that's actually did any procedures. I'm sure that he has probably ordered her, but he's the one that's answered my questions. And, you know, he has built up that kind of a trust. I'm not saying that I like him or that he's some kind of a good being, but I will say that they have it set up to where in my case anyway, where he has always presented himself in that same way all through the years. And that's kind of how it started with me. And it's just, it's been a multitude of things since then.
So did it open up other paranormal avenues for you? Like maybe dealing with maybe ghosts or, non-living entities or something like that? Have you ever, because in my opinion, I kind of bunch all this together in one big genre. I don't really think of it as, you have abductions over here and you have sightings over here and you have ghosts over here. I think just through my experience that everything is kind of entwined.
Yeah, that's a good observation, Guy, because I wish more people would fall under that line of thinking. I agree 100%. And yes, there's a strong correlation between experiencers and increased paranormal activity. Just time and time again, when I meet other experiencers and we start talking, you know, in whichever way, it always leads to that they've had an increase to paranormal activity after they begin these experiences. In my case, it was exactly the same thing. The first two experiences, I was taken one more time at the old farmhouse that I remembered. And then after that, they started suppressing my memories because I remember the first time I saw the Wizard of Oz and I seen the flying monkeys, I just went hysterical. And my mother couldn't figure out why. And I had told her, I was talking at the time, I was telling her, I got these little friends and stuff. And she just kind of passed it off, as many parents do, even to this day, unfortunately, as just, you know, your kid's little imaginary friends and all kids have them and everything like that. Little did she know what mine actually were. But as I went on into childhood, I mean, right after that, I started having multitudes of paranormal experiences. I became like a ghost magnet. They wouldn't leave me alone. And it got to the point where, I would see full body apparitions. One time, when I was about 11 years old, one got in bed with me, laid down beside me. I could feel actually movement on my hair. The shake in my bed constantly, all the usual stuff, the faucets turning on by themselves, doors opening, on and on and on. And then I got to the point where I started actually being able to hear them, which continues to this day, developing clear clairaudient ability. And of course, as a kid, you know, you're scared out of your mind from this stuff. I mean, I was afraid to go to sleep. I was afraid of the dark because it just got completely out of control. And I would tell my parents, you know, hey, you know, this has happened, this happened, and I'd get one of those, you know, just be quiet and go to back to bed stuff. And it did continue, really. It kind of led me into the paranormal, and I started researching it at a very early age because of that. I had no idea at the time all the abduction stuff was being blocked out. I had a lot of the symptoms you know, the nosebleed started and all the stuff like that. But I just had a strong desire to research all the supernatural and unusual things that there is out there. And part of it stemmed from wanting these spirits to leave me alone at the time. So there's a strong correlation between the two. And I wish more researchers, you know, would kind of see that it does overlap. I mean, I personally believe there's a dimensional aspect to it. You know, I've did a lot of spirit communication. My wife and I, we go under Halo Paranormal, but it's really just us. We're not really a team, but we do a lot of ITC work now. And as I got to be an adult and when the memories from the abductions actually surfaced, you know, I started kind of taking a positive from it of what happened to me because I started using these, I just call it increased psychic awareness. I don't claim to be a psychic, but, you know, I think everybody sort of has that ability. It's just most people block it off. And these experiences, in my opinion, I believe that the energy field in the experiencer's body gets changed because I personally have seen in the dimensional portal that they use to come in and get you. And that was only about 2 to 3 years ago that I saw that because I'd always wondered, like, you know, how are they coming in here undetected? Only you're seeing them. I did have one incident with another experience with another witness, but and I found out, you know, they have the capabilities and the technology. I mean, they're using dimensional portals and coming in. And I believe when you get taken through that, that it increases the you know, your natural the frequency of your energy it seems to increase. And when you come back, it's still there. And through my paranormal research, I've found that I believe that the spirit world kind of exists in a dimension where their frequency vibrates at a faster rate, and it seems to match up to experiencers. So, you know, it's like what are they going to naturally go to? A frequency that they can detect easier and that they feel that they have a chance to communicate with.
Sure. I mean, if you have an advanced race and, you know, all you have to do is be able to control, like, electromagnetism, you know, and you can walk through walls. I mean, you can do
exactly.
I mean, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, and just it could be the same situation to where, you know, we only see a small visible spectrum of light. Well, you know, unless you are kind of switched on like a beacon or whatever, like what happens to a lot of experiencers, you know, you become more in tune with a lot of this stuff. And that's all I think it is. It's a matter of tuning. You know, I think it could be that simple. I think human physics will be able to start explaining this in the next couple hundred years, you know, and it won't be so hard for people to, you know, to believe. I think we're going to make leaps in technology to where they can, people are going to start going,
quantum physics seems to be caught up, and they're even saying now, I think last I heard that they're theorizing that there's 11 dimensions now, and so I saw something a couple of weeks ago that they had discovered these wormholes opening and closing all around the Earth, and they even said, like, oh wow, if we could learn to control these things, the things that we could do would just be remarkable. So it may even happen sooner than that. I mean, but I always tell people, just because we can't comprehend it doesn't mean it's not possible.
And I don't even think we're top of the food chain on this planet.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, I think there could be whole other species and societies existing right along with this. It's just, you know, we're not in tune with it. We can't see it. We can't feel it. Well, we can feel it. We can see it. But it's just certain people, you know, you have to be kind of turned on, I guess. I don't know, but touched with it, you know.
Well, I kind of just in the paranormal work, you know, that did it people talk about they're always afraid of ghosts and stuff, and really that I don't think a ghost is so much trying to scare you unless there's something really negative. Most of them, from my experience, are just trying to get your attention because they want help, and they're doing whatever they possibly can to get your attention. And I tell, just like what you're describing, and it could very well be the same way with alien entities, that they're existing in a dimension that like you said, our eyesight, the spectrum of what we can see, the light spectrum doesn't present it to enable us to be able to view it only in glimpses sometimes, but that they're still there. And I believe, people say they're afraid of ghosts, I'm like, you might as well not be, because they're everywhere. I mean, they're literally everywhere. Yeah, it doesn't have to be some old creepy house or old creepy location. They're literally everywhere, and the dimensions do seem to overlap like that a lot of times. I don't think they're parallel with each other. I actually think they're sort of like stacked, and sometimes they go into each other.
It's pretty much my opinion too on ghosts. I don't think that it has to be something with trauma or anything like that. I've been sitting in this room I'm in now listening to music. Lights are on and everything, and something tap 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 on the side of my headphones. I came flying out of my skin. Turning around thinking it's somebody had opened the door and was trying to get my attention, but I was more freaked out that the door was closed and there was no one there. What I mean? And I just said, please don't do that. gonna give me a heart attack.
that's the way to do it. I mean, is be kindness, because really they're most of them are just us in a different form. Most of them have incarnated in a physical form, and they need to be respected just as you would anybody else. If you're that type of person that does have a mutual respect for his fellow mankind, and a lot too many people go into the Hollywood thing of demonic, and I've even been told that the abductions things that it's all demonic, and I can't wrap my head around that whatsoever. Because I don't see, first of all, I've been doing paranormal investigation for many, many years, and I've been in about every kind of location. Everything you could possibly imagine, short of maybe like an old castle or something, but everything that you could possibly imagine, some very, very haunted locations, and experienced about everything a person can experience in the paranormal field, and I have not one time ever have I felt that I was in the presence of a demon. I've been told that. I've caught EVPs that have told us that it was a demon. But really, I believe the personality carries over, and it's just, if you're a jerk on this side, usually it kind of gets enhanced on the other side. You become more bitter and more angry, and it kind of, because of your situation, and I think that increases a lot. But, I don't believe that the aliens are demonic either. I think they have a clear agenda. Has nothing to do with demonic forces.
And that kind of shows the arrogance of humans to just say things like, "Well, they don't look like us, so they're not in God's image, so they're evil." What I mean? I mean they just brush it off to where
it's usually. The question that I always say to people who say they don't believe in aliens or that we're – I mean, of course, it's man's ego to really think that we're the only species and the dominant species like you alluded to earlier. But I believe that – I always ask, I don't know about your God, but the God that I believe in, I really – of all the unlimited – amount of planets that's not only in our universe but on and on, do you really think that God is so limiting that he's just and our little tiny speck of dirt is the only place that he gave life to?
Yeah, and people are not they're just this world is so big to them. It's like all encompassing to a lot of just of who they are, the sky and you know, it's thousands of miles between countries, and the, you know, it just seems so big. And it, that's, and they can actually grasp a God, you know, lording over this place. But if you, all I do is tell people, I say, listen, go on YouTube, find, Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot, and just watch it. It's 4 minutes of the most humbling commentary you will ever hear.
Yeah.
You know, it is. And it's just,
yeah,
you know,
I forget the math equation that Carl did, but it was great because, you know, he did some kind of like, you know, the odds of intelligent life equation one time. And it was just astronomical, you know.
Yeah. It's the Drake equation or whatever that is. But, you know, we're just in the scheme of things, in the scheme of space, in the universe, we're completely inconsequential. I mean, we're not even we don't even rate on a scale.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're just this itty bitty rock planet. I mean, it's a beautiful place. That is just full of wonders, and I tell people who are into conspiracy theories and all this crazy UFO stuff, you know, I'm like, go outside, pick a flower or something, find out what that flower is, how it came to be, where did it come from, and you'll just be amazed, you know. And there's like billions of things on that planet, on this planet, that you can do that to, you know, to kind of keep you grounded and keep you out of the, you know, out of the craziness.
Well, it's a lot more complex, both in the spirit world and with anything to do with aliens than people realize. It's just not as simple as that. A lot of people that I guess they feel safer that way. Just to keep it in real simple terms, if there's no aliens, if there is, they're too far away, they can never get to us. And B, you know, you just die and you just go one of two places. Usually that's the belief. And it's just not that simple. It's just not. If you do the research and you have the experiences and you gather the evidence, you know, you'll find that out.
Personally, I don't believe that there's a planet out there by Sirius B that somebody's getting in a ship and actually traveling through space to get here. They're using some other sort of transportation, whether it be interdimensional or whatever. I mean, they figured that out. You know, I've heard scientists say, they see a ship, you know, a piece of video, and the ship's moving, and, you know, it's going like thousands of miles an hour, stopping, and then, you know, going in another direction, and they're saying, well, that can't be a UFO because gravity would kill them when they stopped and started, and the G-forces. And I'm like, well, if there's a species that is visiting us, I think they would have figured that out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the thing.
You know what I mean? I mean,
that's once again like ego of the human race to think that we're the supreme intelligence. And you know, I can tell you that with the Greys, in my experiences, the mental capabilities of these creatures is just beyond comprehension, and the ability that they have to control us mentally. I mean, you feel like you get to the point where you start feeling like a lab rat because, and I've heard, you know, different people say, you can rebuke them in the name of Jesus, or you can do this and you can fight them or whatever. I don't agree with that at all, because if that was the case, I don't think there would be the abduction phenomena. You know, people's like, oh, okay, you know, leave in the name of Jesus and we're all safe. It just doesn't work. I'm sorry. It just doesn't.
It rings pretty hollow.
Yeah. And so what when you got a civilization that could be hundreds of thousands, they might be 1 or 2 million years past us. Who knows? I mean, that's just something that everybody, it's hypothetical as to how far advanced that they are. And of course, they're not the only ones. I don't believe that they are the only ones that came to Earth and presently coming to Earth. But that is it. I mean, the technology that they have and their mental capabilities are so far past us that we're primitive. And people don't want to accept that as our place in the universe, but that is the reality of it.
Right. You know, I don't even believe that the grays or whatever, or other people report, you know, like insects and stuff like that. I don't even believe that they are the actual aliens, because, listen, you know, we're basically meat. And, you know, space and itself is very inhospitable to meat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We would literally, when a human body goes out into space, and we have guys, astronauts that are out there, you know, their bones start to atrophy. They have a lot of health things happen with them, derogatory health things. And, you know, they're not getting superpowers or nothing. They're getting weaker, and their bodies are not responding well to zero gravity.
Right. It's very hard to acclimate to that kind of environment.
I mean, we would literally, if we were going to go start going to the outer planets and stuff like that, we would have to have either like genetically modified humans for space travel, or have them like be born in space. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's just where they live. You know, now imagine traveling through inner dimensions, or you know, traveling through solid objects with electromagnets and being able to control all that, because how do you think that would affect you know, something that's made of tissue? You know?
Well, there's a definite interdimensional aspect to it, like I said earlier. I mean, and you know, I've even pondered over that the grays are interdimensional beings, but they could be in another dimension, another planet, from another planet in another dimension, you know, parallel universe type. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's just a lot of possibilities as to what they are. But, you know, oddly enough, when you talked about being the effects of the flesh, I mean, their bodies seem very atrophied. You know, their mental capabilities is the only thing they seem to have left. They don't use they've just basically slits for mouths, but obviously they at one time in their evolution had a use for it. You know, it's like they communicate telepathically, so there's no defined ears or anything like it's like a lot of the stuff that we have that we use. It seems, and even them as a physical body, they're just so frail. I mean, very frail. And it seems like that they themselves have atrophied. I believe that's one of the interests that they have in humans is that we're a physical specimen that makes good hybrids. You know, I mean, we have bodies that are agile, quick, strong, you know, compared to them. They seem to be completely devoid of emotion as well. That seems to be another big asset that we have that either they once had and lost somewhere along, maybe they start to the point where they relied on technology so much that, you know, they just ended up eventually losing their emotions, but they don't seem to have any emotion whatsoever. And then human sexuality, you know, I don't know if they're able to actually reproduce, you know, the way we do anyway, or the way anything on our planet does. They seem to have got to that point of atrophy. So that there is things that they do seem to seek in us.
Yeah, I think maybe they've evolved to the point to where, you know, everything's done in a test tube. There's no really physical interaction. And, you know, I mean, how many – my thing is if somebody's so advanced – and this abduction phenomenon has been going on for, you know, quite a while.
You know, back to Ezekiel, you know, I mean, there's
– Yeah.
you want to – I mean, it has been going on for a very long time.
And it's what is it that they are – what is their true – I hate this word, but what is their true agenda, you know? If they've been with us for this long and they've been – and they have been doing these, you know, horrific experiments or whatever, some people have good experiences with them. Some people do not. You know, what is the criteria, you know, you had some horrific stuff happen to you where somebody else would have a completely benign, positive experience. And but, you know, are they doing experiments on this person? Are they just doing them on certain types of people? You know,
they are selective. I think genetics has a big part to do with it, and I think once they find a certain gene pool that they like, they'll stay in a family until it gets watered down to the point where that it's not of use for them anymore. It seems to be one of the common trends seems to be Native American blend with either Irish or English or, you know, somewhere, some sort of combination like that seems to be very common. That's exactly what I am. And I've noticed that many times in other, at least with the Grays. I mean, some people talk about getting taken by different, they describe different aliens and come back, you know, the whole, they're our space brothers and are here to help and everything like that. And that's great. I mean, that's, if that's what they believe and it's a positive experience for them, that certainly has not been the case with me. From the very beginning, and I mean they haven't killed me, obviously, but there's a lot of people out there with a lot of psychological damage and trauma inflicted upon them that's holding it in because of society's perception of, oh, if you believe in aliens or UFOs, you know, everybody sits around wearing tinfoil hats and, you know, it's a little green man and it's all that silly stuff like that, and one of the things, the reason I wrote Children of the Grays to talk about my experiences that I've known about for 25 years now, and I held it a secret all that time because of that same reason, and it's just something that no one should have to live with, and I want to make people aware that this is a very real phenomenon. It happens to people, all people from all walks of life. There's a lot of common things. It does alter somewhat, but and it does inflict psychological trauma to the people that this is happening to in different levels, and it surfaces in different levels. You know, some people get addictions and does it, you know, escapism and stuff when the underlying fact is this event has happened to them. Like I didn't know. I started getting anxiety attacks. I was in my early 20s. You know, I started getting anxiety attacks. Well, I'd been an athlete when I was younger. At the time, I was a musician. I was playing shows every night. You know, I was used to being in front of people and stuff. And I got to the point where I didn't even want to leave my house. And it just got severe. It got crippling. And when I actually had to seek therapy. And when I did, I didn't, even when this stuff started surfacing, like I start having these conscious memories, and then I start having all these dreams about it. I would see something, somebody would say something, all of a sudden this memory would come back. It was just a floodgate. And I even at that time, I still didn't even tell my therapist. I mean, that's the perception that society puts out against people that have experiences. And it's just a shame, and it's unfortunate, and it has to stop. You know, so
yeah, they just explain it away.
Well, you know, because you're worried, like, oh, you tell him what he's gonna suggest you go, you know, into some kind of psychological rehab or something, or give you some kind of medication, or you know, you're delusional, you're, you know, the sleep paralysis, which is just a joke. Just all this like scientific stuff, you know, that these, and this guy, I actually went to two therapists. You know, I left the first one because I was getting no help, and the second guy helped me a lot, but I never did tell him. You know, I never did. When I had the breakthrough, I never told him because it was still sort of like this taboo thing, you know, in the 80s. And it just took me a lot of courage to finally build up. My wife kind of started encouraging me, and she goes, you know, you could help a lot of people if you come out and, you know, you remember so much. And you know, they can find strength in what you did. They can find their own strength, and they can start to talk to somebody. And I've been contacted by so many people. You know, we did a television show for Discovery about some of my experiences, and so I've had quite a bit of exposure. And I've had so many people, all kinds of people, contacting me and said, I didn't. I had something like what you talk about, or, you know, they read something in the book that triggered a memory in them and stuff like that. And they've been traumatized as well and live with it like all these years, and had all this stuff in their lives that they've had to deal with nowhere to turn. And I do want people to know that there are people that will believe you, that will listen to you. And it's getting more and more like that all the time. You know, people don't laugh like, you're still going to have your haters and your people trying to make fun of you. And, you know, I mean, I've had some guy come out and say, oh, you know, this guy needs to be locked up and thing like that. Well, that's okay. You know, he's got his own issues, it sounds like. And I've got a long list of people for that's known me for years and years and years that'll stand by my character, my reputation. So, that's just, a lot of people don't want this kind of stuff getting out either because it goes against their belief system. So, but it's important for people to know that if you do have any kind of memories or any kind of physical evidence that this is happening to you, to find someone to, you know, you can contact me. I'll help you there to talk to, because it helps tremendously. I mean, it took me 2 years to write Children of the Grays because I would go back into depressions. I was reliving all these incidents again, and once you start like writing about it and the details and stuff, you know, it all comes back, and you kind of got to go through it all again. And I would stop, you know, I'd get into these depressions. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this, and I would wait 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes a couple of months, and then I would kind of build my strength back up and start it up again. Did I lose you?
No, when people, it's almost like a PTSD thing, isn't it?
It is. It very much is.
A lot of people who have had sexual abuse in their life too, kind of exhibit a lot of the same, you know, behaviors later on in life as the abduction phenomena. And I think the abduction phenomena, I think, is the, it's the last vestige right now of ridicule.
Yeah.
People just cannot wrap their head around it. And it seems something like out of a movie or something like that. You know what I mean? Because it's so intense.
Yeah, and that's even like the paranormal. You know, people will say, I don't believe in ghosts. And then until it happens to them. You know, and I've countless people like that. I think, getting back to your to the sexual abuse thing, I think the correlation between that is because you're sexually abused in a lot of these procedures. So there's the same type of psychological trauma that you're subjected to by these and time again. I mean, it's not just usually, it's not just a one-time thing, you know, and even when, as a male, you know, they'll, they'll take sperm from you, and you know, it's basically it's like rape, and they'll subject you to sexual things. I mean, I went into great detail about that. It's embarrassing, but I went into great detail about it in the book because I just wanted to. If I was going to talk about what happened to me, I was going to talk about all of it, and even if it was embarrassing, because I just wanted to know people. This is what happens.
Right, and I'm a very bad host, but you can go to Amazon.com and look for Children of the Greys. Right.
Yeah, it's print version and Kindle version on there.
Okay. You know, growing up when I was a small child, I can honestly say that I've never seen an alien, but I did have tremendous amounts of missing time.
Mm.
I've never had an urge to go and try to, you know, do hypnotism or whatever,
mm-hmm.
To see if I was abducted and that sort of thing. You know what I mean? It's really weird, and a lot of times it kind of bothers me a little bit, you know, like, you know, did they do such a good job on my memory that
Well, they usually do. I mean, you're not alone in that. They usually do. And you know, one thing is, like, once I started remembering what did happen to me and putting all the pieces of the puzzle together, like, oh, that's – now I know where those unusual scars come from and, you know, why this happened to me and, you know, why I went so long with never getting sick and all these kind of things like that, then I never got regressed for abduction either. I didn't want to be one of those people where if I did ever decide to come out with this, that, you know, they would say, well, yeah, you know, this, he was regressed, and it was the hypnotherapist guiding and baiting the questions and all that kind of stuff like that. A lot of skeptics will say, but they can't say that about me because I never did that, you know.
Right.
So, but I have heard that it's very helpful. I've thought about it myself even, you know, like, wow, what else could I remember if I did go get regressed now? Because there are some things, you know, I have a series of very unusual scars on my back that I put pictures of in the book, and puncture marks on my side of my rib cage. And, you know, I've had doctors say, you know, when did you have back surgery and things like that? And of course, I never have. But I don't remember how I got those, and the only thing I can think is that it was so traumatic that I couldn't bring my, you know, it just won't surface because it was just too traumatic. You know, I mean, I talked to Travis Walton a couple times, and you know, we just kind of talked like abductee to abductee type thing, and privately, and he told me that. That he had to stop when he tried to do regression and stuff because it was physically affecting him so much that, you know, they brought him out of it and said, you know, you better just leave this stuff where it's at because you might not be able to handle the truth. And that's the thing, you know, if in your case, you know, if you're not having any kind of if it's not affecting your life per se in any derogatory way, maybe it's better to leave it where it's at. You know, unless it just got, you know, bothering you, eating at you so much. But that's what I usually advise to people. Like, if you're functioning fine and everything's good, and you may suspect, you know, like in your case, when you have the missing time and stuff, I mean, of course, that would definitely raise a red flag. But, you know, maybe it, cause the thing is, like, you don't know what you're going to open up, you know. But if you're starting to have like these nightmares and you know, the first 2 years that I was married to Gina, you know, I would have these nightmares 2-3 times a month, and you know, she would I'd be screaming and everything, and she'd wake me up, and I never told her, you know, I never even told her. I mean, this stuff is just you try to bury it so deep that, and she knew, like, man, something's happened to this guy, you know, something. I mean, nobody does this, you know. And, but once you do get it out and tap into that, it is very therapeutic, and it's very helpful. And, you know, I think it makes you a better person in the end. You gain self-empowerment that you've lost when you're with him, because you have no power, and it does make you feel worthless. You know, like you can't do anything to stop. I mean, and when you come back here, you know, you sort of carry that with you, and but getting the help like that, it does strengthen you, and it gives you this sense of empowerment that at least you can control what happens in your everyday life in this world. Because otherwise, you know, you end up being just a victim. In a way I look at it is they win. You know, it's like,
right,
if you let it carry over into this as well, and it just happens so often. But you know, it's just something everybody has to decide for themselves. But usually, if you do tap into it and get it out, and even like I alluded to earlier, if you start talking to somebody else, I mean, even if it's just a trusted friend, just to tell other people about it, it's just so like, even when I got this book done, I felt this like this, before it even came out, I mean, just when I knew it was done, I just felt this weight like lifted off my shoulders. And, you know, I knew that I was revealing a lot of personal details basically to the world, but I kind of got to the point in life where it was just important for me that people knew that this, what happened to me, there's a few things, like I've never read an abduction book. I've never been able to make it through one. Yeah. I just, you know, but you know, I have like saw different programs and read stuff, short stories and stuff on the internet. And, you know, even I Kathleen Martin, who's one of the contributors in the book, and by the way, I got some great contributors in there. When you talked about the agenda, that was one of the things I kind of wanted to show, that, you know, there's such a wide spectrum of beliefs on what the agenda actually is. And so I called in different friends of mine, very well respected people, and asked them if they would contribute to about that, you know, what did they think was actually going on, and specifically pertaining to the Greys, if they could, but just if not, just in sort of like general terms of the alien agenda. And, you know, some of it was similar, and some of it was a little bit different ideas, because I don't think anybody truly knows. You know, they're not gonna. You know, people always ask me, and it's like, well, did you ask them this? Did you ask them that? Blah blah blah. And it's like, no, you know, we don't sit down and have fireside chats. You know, it's just not that kind of situation.
Yeah, there's some creature or creatures. You know, they're probably blocking your fight or flight instinct on a certain level. You know what I mean? To keep you.
Well, what happens after a certain number of times, you just break down. You quit resisting because you realize it's futile. You know, I mean, it's right. Like the old Star Trek, resistance is futile. I mean, it really does come to that. After so many times, you just like, you know what? I'm just going to hope for the best. I'm going to cooperate and hope that it's not too painful and just get it over with. And that's really kind of what when you get to the point that happens.
So, you know, you started as a child being abducted. How long has it continued up until present day? Because they could just be monitoring you.
Yeah,
you know, as you get older.
It's getting less and less. It seemed like when I was in the prime of life, you know, like 20s and 30s, it was a lot more frequent. Now, from the ones that I remember, and I have been able to remember most of what happens to me anymore, because I spend a lot of time studying meditation, studying self-hypnosis, doing everything I could do to strengthen my mind, because I did that initially to to break their control of me. I was only able to do that one time momentarily. It was a great feeling in the intake room, I call it. You know, like they always do a brief examination when they first take you. And, you know, I discovered that the small grays, I really think the small grays are sort of a biological robot. I really believe that they, you know, they have a complete hive mentality. They're very matter of fact. Everything that they do is just a set plan. They just seem to be there for a reason, doing their job, and that's it. And
There's no empathy or anything like that.
No. Other than the usual, and it's at this point, it's condescending. You know, like, oh, we're not going to hurt you. You know, the usual things that they tell you. It really does. It gets to a point where it just becomes condescending. It's like, okay, I'm not five anymore. You know.
Right.
And it just seems like they're programmed like to transfer these thoughts into you. The only interchange of communication that I've had has been with the tall one. And there has been times that I have had a couple chances to ask questions of him. And they'll answer, he will answer what he wants. Some stuff, you know, they won't. I've been asked, oh, did you ask them where they're from? And quite frankly, you know, that wasn't really a question that's ever came to my mind because I didn't figure I would understand it anyway. You know, if they tell me, I'm not an astronomer, I don't know. You know, they could tell me some kind of coordinates or some name of some planet or something, and it really would be nothing to me. I did one time ask permission of the tall one, if I could ask him a question, and I was standing next to him, and I said, well, he gave me permission to do it, and I asked him who his God was. You know, to me, that was an important question, more so than, like, where are you from? And without hesitation, he answered back, and he said, we are all one with the one who is all. And I've never forgot that. You know, I'm just like, wow. You know, it was so simple but so profound that I didn't even follow up with anything. I didn't even know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's some pretty heavy stuff right there he's hitting you with, you know. You guys are like hitting the joint going, you know, passing the bong back and forth. It's like, dude, we're like one.
I've thought about that like ever since, you know. I'm just like, you know, what was the real meaning? What was he trying to tell me, you know?
Well, hey, Brett, we got to go on break for about 10 minutes. So, you know, just hang out and we'll pick it up when we come back in like 10 minutes.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, just hang tight, man.
But I was summoned from Montgomery. I had my gun.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select Other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272, again, 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Whoa! Did you hear?
Listen to the Church of Mavis radio show, hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett, 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights. Follow your weird and journey into the high strange. Be sure to stop by
www.churchofmavisradio.com
for upcoming shows, paranormal news, and show archives. That's
www.churchofmavisradio.com.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Join us for Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, August 9th through 11th. A weekend of exploration into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, and new evidence of ongoing contact. A weekend of films, panels, lectures, and workshops will feature leading experts, including George Noory, and many more of some of the most important theorists and scientists in the field. Enter to win a free ticket at contactinthedesert.net. See you at Joshua Tree Retreat Center in August for Contact in the Desert, 760-365-8371.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, Brett.
Hey.
All right. Sorry, I'm having a... I'm going to throw these headphones away, I swear to God. I just went through this whole long introduction. Okay. Welcome back to the second hour of Citizen Sane. We're with Brett Oldman. He is the author of Children of the Greys. And I wanted to bring something up that's really, you know, that really bothers me. There's people like you, and there's people like, you know, Sasha and the group that they Sasha belongs to a group called ICAR, which is run by Joe Montado, who is actually the owner of this network that we're on right now. And they do a lot of data gathering in regards to blood types, you know, that sort of thing. It's real research to an extent, as much as you can with abduction, you know what I mean? Because there's not like anything with how they abduct people. It's a different experience for different people. And there was a psychic show on before us with host Jesse Bravo, and you know, there are a lot of good psychics out there, but there are a lot of people out there that you know, are out for themselves, and they you know, they're out there trying to scam people for money, and
right.
they do one thing that I've noticed is that there are a lot of abductees or people, as like we were talking about earlier, that have been holding on to this their whole life. They don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. And when they finally take that step, you know, it's a brave thing to do. And the first person they contact or get involved with is someone like Alfred Weber or some of these lunatics out there, that just totally fills in their head with a bunch of crap,
mm-hmm.
you know, leads them down wrong paths, gives them supposedly all the answers, you know. You know, did you ever experience something like that when you were trying to get out there? Because I know Sasha works a lot with abductees, and it's a very private thing that she does with people, you know.
And that's the way it should be, especially at first, you know, until you get a grasp on what's happened to you and learn how to deal with it.
Right. Did you have run into with people that were, you know, just in it for themselves and they're freaking nuts?
Well, you know, you're going to have that element. It just kind of comes with the territory. I've even been contacted by people like that. I try to be kind to everyone as I can, but I will draw the line sometimes. And I agree with, you know, what you're saying. It's out there. I've never been in really like associated with anybody like that. I mean, the only person that I kept this so to myself, even when I decided to write the book. There's a friend of mine, Sandy Nichols. He runs. He's also an abductee, and I went to a meeting to hear Stanton Friedman talk by the Tennessee MUFON, and quite frankly, I'm not really a real big fan of MUFON, but I wanted to hear Stanton. And went down there and you know, got to meet him, had a nice chat with him and stuff, and at the meeting this guy Sandy Nichols was also talking, and actually Brent Raines, another contributor to my book, was talking, and ended up meeting them both, but Sandy, I don't know, just one of those things. Like my wife, like she goes, well, I you know, I get a feeling about this guy, and let's contact him, you know, and she's the one that did it, not me. And he was like one of the first people that, you know, he had like the alien research group, and he'd met a lot of other people that had these experiences, not to mention with his own experiences. And I just met him. I kind of felt comfortable to talk to him. And he wasn't trying to plan anything in my head. He was just kind of listening to me and relaying back some of the stuff that had happened to him. In his case, you know, he's experienced reptilians and grays. I've never experienced reptilian. But it was kind of comforting to come across somebody like that. That when one experiencer kind of talks to another, you like now, like when I talk to people, I can tell there's certain things. I know there's like surveys and things like that, but there's certain things that I know, like different things that you can describe on the craft, or you know, there's just certain little details that if somebody brings that up, like when they're telling me something in their account, then I know that they've at least with the, if they say they're with the grays, you know, there's or certain things that's happened to them and stuff like that, you know, you kind of get a feel for, well, this is a genuine thing. Even though, you know, people do have different experiences and describe different aliens, but I try to stay away, you know, from the people you're talking about. I've never really been approached by them. I mean, I friended John Lear from, you know, he's controversial figure these days anyway. And but this was in the late 80s, and I did tell him some of the stuff that had happened to me, and he was really very kind to me, and it really taught me a lot about at the time what he believed was going on. And you know, he's since kind of altered the beliefs over the years. But you know, I talked to him a couple of years ago, and you know, he's still very cordial, and we don't exactly agree on everything, but I think that's okay. A lot of people are like that. There's good friends of mine that I don't actually agree 100% with on some of this stuff, and that's the thing about it. I mean, there's so much to this. Like I talked to you about earlier, it's so complex, and there's a lot of possibilities that's going on with this.
You know, a lot of the experiences are relative to the person having it. It's not like it's the same experience for everybody.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing that happens, especially with the grays, is they will subject you to mental stuff. They will get situations where they can monitor your emotions, and they're going to, you know, case in point, like one time they took me to a room that was just completely barren, and there was this observation window along one side of the room, and there was several of them out there, and they just I was led to the middle of the room, and they just left, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. There was like nothing in the room, and all of a sudden my environment changed to earth-like. I was like outside, summer day, green grass, blue sky, birds chirping, you know, like a whole different reality. And I heard a dog barking, and turned around, and it was a pet that I had, a dog that I had for 17 years, who had died. And but it was so real, and he was so happy to see me, and I was like playing with him and everything. And they kind of let that go on for a while until I got really, really wrapped up into it. Like your mind, you know, you know it's not real, but it's so real to you that you just can't resist getting like wrapped up in it. And then it just disappeared in a flash. And I realized like, oh, I was just part of an experiment monitoring my emotions. And they went into my subconscious mind and pulled these memories out and basically used them against me. And, you know, they did that more than once. So sometimes, you know, people, and of course, then sometimes they'll plant screen memories to try to cover up what the procedures that they did. So it can get pretty confusing, especially for people that only remember bits and pieces, or maybe only remember two or three times being taken. You know, some people say, oh, I was only taken once. I really doubt that. You know, unless you didn't meet the criteria genetically for what they're looking for, I really doubt that. You know, I don't think they're going to go through some just to take somebody one time.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about some of the stuff that they're doing with trying to analyze how the brain works, especially like while you sleep, but the brain actually goes and does house cleaning at night while you sleep, and it stores memories. It does all sorts of stuff. It communicates with the left and right, you know, to keep everything in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagine the technology that's able to go in and actually pull a memory out and manipulate you with it.
Yeah.
One of your own memories.
Yeah. I mean, and I know, like, they say that 2 to 3 hours a night that you go into like a self-hypnosis mode while you're sleeping, which taps into your subconscious mind. And I think a lot of times that's where people say, oh, I had the strangest dream about aliens and it was so real and everything like that. Especially if they've had other types of either physical evidence or just regular memories that doesn't appear as a dream. But I think a lot of times they are like tapping into what's locked in their subconscious mind. You know, it's just that during the dream state, your conscious mind, taps into that. You know, like I said, they say 2 or 3 hours a night. So that's a lot of stuff to pull out. But for them, for the Greys to be able to do that, I have no idea. I have no idea how to do it. You know, I don't know how they can control you to where you can't resist anything that they're doing to you. You know, why they convince you that part of your body is paralyzed and you can't move until they want you to, and then you're fine, you know. So, like I said, their mind control is just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable what they can do. And that part is extremely scary because, you know, when you start talking about mental capabilities like that, then you don't know what all they can possibly do. I mean, that's strength. That's, you know, physical strength's one thing, but when you can control another species to that degree, that to me, that's really strength.
Yeah, you know, and you know, a lot of people create false memories, and they have false memories that they hold on to of maybe things that didn't happen or stuff that's actually not real. You know, it's kind of mind-boggling to know that they can go in there and know what happened and what really didn't happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the real memory is there,
right?
But you're like going off a conscious memory. You know, when you think about something that, because two people will be in an event and they'll have different memories of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right. Yeah.
And you have a conscious memory of it, and then there's a memory, the real memory, that's stuck way down deep, and that's where they navigate to go to.
Yeah.
It's like they...
Yeah, that's what they're monitoring. That's what they use against us. And because what better thing to monitor an emotion other than create a reality where you're going to experience that emotion?
Right, and it's usually from fear. It's usually some sort of, you know, something traumatizing or something that may have happened to you, or they may have been showing you, look, we can do all this stuff for you, but then we can also immediately take it all away.
Yeah, that particular thing was they were monitoring joy, happiness, and stuff like, you know, but they will. They will induce fear. They will induce anger. They're really fascinated with anger. They're extremely fascinated with the emotions behind our sexuality, and it goes. Obviously, they've figured out how we reproduce, but what they seem to be just completely fascinated with is emotion behind that. And I sometimes think that they might even have the ability to, even when we're back here, that they could, I know Eve Lorgan talks about this a lot, where they make people break up, make people get together, bring certain, just to create scenarios that they want to monitor. And it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they would have that kind of capabilities and to whatever they're using. I obviously believe that they've have implants, and how they work, I don't know. But I've moved a lot, and it doesn't matter. I've moved all the way across the country and back again, and they still find me. So, it just doesn't matter. So there's got to be some way that they're doing this, and so implants is the only logical thing that makes any sense. And I also think that they could probably tap into that at any given time and monitor particular emotion, and it wouldn't surprise me the least bit if they don't create some kind of mood in you or something to trigger a particular scenario. I mean, the emotional aspect of is probably that and our sexuality are probably the two most important things that they're looking for. I think they're creating these hybrids, and they can't understand them. They can't deal with them because they're coming, they have human DNA, and they're coming with these emotions, or at least partially. And that's something that they desperately need to understand. And I don't know, you talk about this has been going on for so long. I mean, for all we know, they're manipulating time. Maybe it hasn't been going on for, 2,000 years or 3,000 years or whatever, or all the way back to the Egyptians or whatever. Maybe they're able to, they've got to the point where they can go anywhere they want in the timeline. So, I mean, there's just so many possibilities, and that's just the answers that we all seek. And to know, to try to understand why, but I think there's a certain, I sense a certain desperation they seem to be hell-bent on the hybrid as far as the grays go, and that's why the little girl that's on the cover of the book, my brother Jeffrey Oldham, he's an award-winning artist in Las Vegas, and it was so important for me to I wanted to put her on the cover because I was shown her at a certain point in my life and was told that she was mine, and I rejected it. And a female hybrid had brought her up to me, and I actually resisted at first, but I knelt down and I started talking to her like you would a 3 or 4 year old kid here, and she never communicated with me, but the way she looked at me and in her eyes and everything, it was just mesmerizing, and there was a certain softness even though she looked very odd, and I really did feel some sort of a bond with her. And when they took her away, I really felt sad about it, and I've never seen her again. I've never shown her to me again, and this was in the early 90s, and I always wonder, like, what happened to her, who she is, where she is now. So I knew if I ever wrote a book, I wanted to talk about the children of the Greys, because it would be like her, like there's others out there. I've met other experiencers who've told me, like, oh, I've seen kids that look very much like her as well. And my brother just did a fantastic job of recreating very close to what I experienced and what I was presented to with. They're doing something along the lines of that, and it all seems to fit together with the sexuality part. The female. I've never seen a female gray that I could actually feel was a female actual gray, I've only seen them in hybrids, which I found very interesting. I think I've lost you again. Can you hear me?
You hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I wonder why they would show you her and just leave you with a billion more questions. Yeah, I mean, do you really think that they care about us at all, you know, on a nurturing level? I know they, according to some people who worked in the military, that they have stepped in, you know, and stopped us from, you know, nuking ourselves or just showing that they can stop this. But then they'll allow us to, you know, go through, you know, the slaughter that happens on a daily basis in this world.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think the new thing has something to do with the, and I was told this, that I don't think it's so much for saving us per se, but it's just the planet itself and the nuke. If it went on to all-out nuke war, it's going to disrupt the orbit of the planet. You know, it's like the ripple effect. It starts disrupting everything down the line. And I think that's more of the interest that they have in that, more so than us. I don't really see that anything that they do, even in my case. I mean, you know, I've been kept really healthy, really healthy. I mean, and I don't think it's that they're doing me a favor. It's just sort of like, you know, you keep your best cattle healthy, you know, because you're using them, you know, and that kind of thing like that. I think it's been more like that. But the nuke thing, I've really never been concerned about that either, because I think when it gets to that grand of a scale, fine, you know, but, you know, the genocide and the wars and all the stuff that we're doing to each other, we must appear just primitive savages to them, and any other alien species that are visiting. I mean, they must just look at us and just shake their heads. I mean, because, you know, I do that myself.
Oh, so, yeah, I'm,
you know, some of us,
when it comes to human beings, dude, I'm like the I'm like the biggest pessimist. I don't think that, you know, I don't give us that much credit. You know, people think, you know, they go from one extreme to the other, like, you know, God gave us his planet to do with what we want, and when we destroy it, he's just going to give us a new one. I mean, there's millions of people that think that way, you know.
Right.
You know, so, and there's no respect for life and, you know, or anything like that. You know, I think they need us, and they need a lot of the resources that are here on this planet just to do with whatever that they're doing. You know, these children that, you know, you were shown or whatever, they could be taking them somewhere else and starting a new whatever, you know.
Yeah,
could be on, people, you know, on their planet, wherever they're from.
There's people that worry that they're creating this huge race of hybrids and they're just going to take over the Earth. And to me, I don't think that's the case, or they would have already done.
Yeah.
So I really think that there's a strong possibility that their race is dying out, and that they need to. That they're trying to get back something that they once had, especially, you know, maybe make themselves stronger physically, but, and especially in the emotional part of things. And so they're sort of taking like either what they once had and they want it back, or what they feel is our best attributes of us, and putting it in with the best attributes that they have. And it's really like, if you think about it, I mean, if you put their kind of intelligence level into something close to a human body, you know, it's pretty impressive, because they might actually do more with it than what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, why not make us better?
Well, and you know what? I mean, I really firmly believe that they've given us technology, and you know, I do believe that it's a trade-off that not to come off like some kind of conspiracy nut, but I do believe that. You know, the government does know about this, and that there is a trade-off for technology, because there's no way to explain to me to rationalize how that we evolved at a certain pace for several thousand years, and then all of a sudden, in like the last 60, 70 years, we went from just Model Ts and, you know,
right, prop
planes and to nanotechnology,
right.
It just
landing on the moon.
You just can't jump that quickly with just the computer age, and it just goes on, and it's still rapidly escalating. So I just don't think we got that much smarter all of a sudden in the last 70 years or whatever. So there does seem to be some kind of correlation between some of these, like, the Roswell crash. You know, there's other supposed crashes and stuff that people talk about. And I mean, I know there's all kinds of like disinformation out there, and that's one of the unfortunate things about the UFO field in general, is disinformation is spread rapidly. So you just kind of, each person has to decide for themselves what to believe, I guess. But they're so, in that respect, I suppose they are helping us. You know, I mean, we've made great strides medically. You know, unfortunately, I think a lot of that is suppressed by our own greed. So we could get into the whole pharmaceutical thing, but I would think that they probably have. I mean, they've held up like their end of the bargain, I would assume, on some of the technology, and I'm sure there's some sort of black op projects that's out there that's developed militarily that would probably even surprise us right now, so that we just, just hasn't been brought to the public.
And I bet there's many, many things across many different sciences and pretty much any different subject that has been moved along by this or is sitting on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, because whether they're going to let it out or not, you're right. I mean, just look what happened to Nikola Tesla when he died. You know, they come in and confiscated his papers, and, so what was done with it? So, I don't think that we could stop them if we wanted to, but I think it makes it easier for them to do what they're doing, what they need to do, especially pertaining to the Greys. You know, a lot of people talk about the reptilians may have been here from the beginning, and they may well have been, but I think as far as the Greys, I think it just makes it easier. I think it's just hilarious to think that we could stop any advanced civilization that had the capabilities, whether however they got here or wherever they came from, they still have the technology to do it, and we don't.
Right.
And so,
right.
To militarily think that we're gonna stop them in that way is just ridiculous. I mean, to even entertain the thought. So I tell people, like, I've experienced the mental capabilities of the Greys, and, you could take, to me, you could stand a gray up against, you know, like a whole platoon armed and no weapon and control what, you know, they'd turn the guns on themselves or, you know, who knows what they could plan in their mind if they thought that they, you know, they might see a million soldiers or something on the other side. You know what I mean? It's like when you've got that kind of capabilities, man, you know, what kind of weapons do you need?
Yeah, I mean, they could just, you know, initiate a flight response in those people in just a second, and they would, like, drop their guns and just start running for the hills.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, they don't – I've heard of that happening before. That people are in an area to where, you know, grays are outside, and all of a sudden they get this feeling that, oh my God, I'm about to get eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex or something like, you know, or something like that, and that horror and that terror that overcomes you, and boom, you know, you're gone, you know, you're out of the way.
Because fear is the greatest evil that we have on this planet, so, you know, of course I would use something like that against us.
Like a primal whatever. Listen, you know, according to, you know, standard archaeology, you know, we were hunter-gatherers way back in the day when we were building all these monolithic sites, you know.
Right.
You know, it's kind of my belief because if you look at the human body, we have devolved – as far as, you know, physically, I mean, our jaws are shorter, our wisdom teeth don't fit anymore. You know, we lost all our hair. We can't go outside without a jacket. You know, we got to live in houses and huddle around heaters. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. We're the only species on the planet that has gone off the beaten track, really, as far as, the evolutionary track, wouldn't you say? I mean, really, if you look at that.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't adapted to our environment.
The only thing we could do is, you know, if we defend ourselves about say we had to defend ourselves against a bear or a bobcat or just another person, you know, we're smarter. And if we had time, we could devise a plan to not get ourselves hurt, but you come across pretty much any animal, whether it be a honey badger or whatever, it's going to kick your ass.
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the thing with the abduction phenomena, you know, because that's why you feel so helpless, because you know that there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, that's the same thing, like if you're out in the woods and a bear starts chasing you, you can run, and maybe you're going to get lucky, you know, and that's great fear right there. You know, if you've ever experienced any kind of a situation like that, that's great fear. When you're taken as an experiencer, there's nowhere to run. You know, you're experiencing this kind of fear at an escalated level that's off the charts. But you have nowhere to run to. There's no, you have no defense, our natural survival defense to kick in. None.
Yeah, physically or mentally, because they can't go in. Yeah, yep. You're not. There could be a common thread that psychically that connects everybody. You know. And they may know how just to, and it may be just something real petty to them, you know, and something that they can just tap into very easily. You know, they can disconnect you from that basically unplug you from the rest of the world, you know?
Yeah. And there's been a couple times that they've placed their finger like right on, you know, your third eye or your pineal gland area. I went black like right after that, and I've always kind of wondered about that, if that had something to do with it, you know, controlling that gland some way.
You know, our brain, And a lot of the things that happened in our day-to-day life are controlled by chemicals and different enzymes and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They may not have that. I mean, our emotions and stuff like that, and certain parts of the brain, there's certain things that get in a C scan to see if you're a freaking psychopath.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I always wonder about our brain in relation to their brain. Well, do they have just one part of their brain that is now the main and only part? Do they not have two sides to their brain? Do they not have, I mean, it's, maybe they evolved differently.
Yeah. It is kind of like odd to think what living without emotion would be like. You know, I mean, it actually seems a pretty bland existence if you just, you know, think about all the vast array of emotions that we go through on a daily basis. Even if you're a level-headed person, you know, you're still going to experience different things, you know, throughout the day. And if you took all that away, I mean, it would be a pretty bland existence.
Yeah. You know, there was a point in my life to where I had to be, before I came out and started doing this show and that sort of thing, where I had to take, you know, heavy doses of antidepressants, and you become a zombie.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't feel anything.
You can kind of relate to in a certain manner.
It's horrible because you're like, you know, you don't feel anything. You know, it's you can't explain it to somebody. You know, it's just you know, it sucks. I mean, I had to change meds because I'm just like, listen, things are happening in my life, and I'm just like, oh, it'll be okay. You know,
right.
Whether it be good or bad or whatever, you know, you just, and pretty soon you stop caring about things, you know, it's really a strange thing to be. I was in an accident in 2005 to where a guy was crossing a highway in the middle of the night. I didn't see him, and I hit him and I killed him.
Mm.
And, and I can tell you, the thing that messed me up the most was that it didn't bother me.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's when I really said, okay, I got to stop. I got to, something's going on. You know what I mean? It just, it didn't resonate with me. Yeah. I'm like, the cops are like, man, are you okay? I don't, most people are freaking. I'm like, dude, I don't feel anything right now.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't a case to where a year, a week later, I freaked out. You know, I just.
You just never did.
It just never bothered me, you know, and that really tore me up in a sense to where it was the big slap in the face, you know, to where for me personally that, you know, I'm dead inside. I've been dead inside for, you know, since I've been, you know, taking these meds and that sort of thing. And that's when I started down this path. I'm like, okay, I need to start rediscovering myself and, you know, and all this. And the whole reason I'm even doing this show is it's therapy. You know what I mean?
Well, and how certain things happen in your life to lead you down, you know, a path where you're supposed to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty crazy. I mean, I eventually went and talked to his, you know, wife and mom and that sort of thing. And, you know, I had no guilt. I mean, everything was cool. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I killed somebody. It was just like, you know, that guy walked out in front of me. There was nothing that I could do.
Right.
But then you don't have those feelings of empathy and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that happen in people's lives that, you know, people like you who went through abduction, or people who deal with who are psychic and they want to be left alone and or whatever. And I think there's a signpost, or there's a you know, a thing that happens in their life to where, boom, you know, they just burst out of a shell or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's how you learn to deal with it in different ways. Just like what I was talking about. I mean, the book has been my therapy, but at the same time, it's been other people's therapy as well. I resisted it for so long, but you know, you do reach a point where, you realize like you have to do this, you know, you have to, whatever happens, and whatever you get subjected to, and it's just something that you understand that I have to do this, you know, and you know, some people is like, well, you know what, the government comes after you, and I'm like, why? You know, if anything, I'm doing them a favor. I'm not the only one, you know, but you know, the more public acceptance of this, the easier it gets for them, in my opinion. And but for all the people that's out there, you know, just like what you're doing, you know, you've got to a point where you had to do something, and so you did it, you know. And that's kind of like where I'm at with what happened with the book. I mean, I just got to that point, and it took a very, very long time. But like you're talking about with yourself, I mean, being therapeutic is very, very much the same thing for me.
Right.
So I've suffered depression off and on my whole life as well, and still do from time to time. You know, I'm not going to deny it, but I've been able now to control it, and you know, I understand. You know, you can never act like this stuff never happened. You know, you can't take it away, and just like what happened with you, I mean, it's always going to be there. But it's the matter of degree that you choose to let it control your life at the present time is the important
right.
thing.
Right.
And knowing what it's going to take to move on and have a productive life, you know, and I felt that I not only helped myself, but I could help others, you know, by coming out with this book. And so far, that's, you know, it's been worth it, and that's what's been happening. So, you know,
since you wrote the book, since you wrote the book, I mean, do you still have nightmares? Do you still have the anxiety? Do you still have a lot of the negative things that were bubbling up?
No. That's how much help that it's been. I've had one nightmare. You know, the book's only been released, the print version's been about 2 months, and the Kindle version's only been about 6 weeks. But it took a while. You know, you got to get a format and all that stuff. It takes a little bit of time for that. But once I actually just finished it, you know, the nightmares stopped. I've had one. And that's it, you know, in several months. And that's like going from two to three a month, you know, to one in several months is a vast improvement. The anxiety, I got control of that a long time ago. And, you know, I just decided that my way of revenge, but I just wasn't going to let them win. You know, I wasn't going to let them.
Right.
They did so much psychologically. You know, this all these feelings that you end up with when you start having these memories, and you have them before that, but you just don't know what's caused it. You know, I mean, even maybe
right.
in your case, you know, you've talked about you know, these missing times and stuff. I mean, maybe this is what's triggering some of these depression episodes, but. You know, it's there. It's in your subconscious mind, just waiting to come out. And,
right.
You know, and maybe if you did get regressed and some of this started coming, it's hard to handle at first. But once you do, the more that comes out, you know, you don't want to accept it, first of all. That's usually what happens. You just don't want to accept it, that kind of stuff happened to you, or you were subjected to that and you did this or whatever. But once you come to terms with that and realize that you had no choice, there was nothing you could do, there's nobody on this planet that could do anything any different, there's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about because no one could do anything about it, then
right.
And in my case, I've turned it around. I've tried to take it to a positive. I've tried to use the abilities that I got paranormal wise, you know, to help spirits. I do that continue to this day. I can relate when you talk about the psychics and stuff. You know, I mean, there's many times that I hear them talking to me. I don't want to come off like I'm some kind of person that hears voices all the time or something like that. I don't want people to get the wrong perception about that, but I do hear them. I've caught it on tape. I've got many, many witnesses that's been on investigations. You know, when I say I hear something, they usually pay attention because I'll have it on recorded as well.
Yeah, we can do a whole show on that with me and you on that.
But you know what I'm saying is, the point is, I've taken what I can from that, from the experiences. I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe I didn't have, I have a very strong energy now. You know, I started doing energy healings and things like that. And especially with the spirit world, it's like I'm not afraid of those people anymore. I haven't been for years, but they're coming to me because they want help. I'm gonna try to give them comfort, try to give them reassurance. Whatever they, you know, message if they want something to somebody. So I'm gonna do that. And so that's a positive that I pulled from the abduction experiences. And I really kind of have I've lived like a no fear. I mean, I'm not talking like where I'm gonna jump off some cliff because I'm not afraid, you know, that kind of thing. I'm
oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But yeah, I have a no fear because I'm like, you know what, of everything I've experienced, what do I have to be afraid of? You know, in this world.
My motto when dealing with paranormal and that sort of thing, it really is. It's just something that I had to incorporate into my life. And it's like, it's not easy, but, you know, it's something I kind of cling to, you know. Well, listen, Brett, we have to wrap things up. Thanks for hanging out with me. If you could just go ahead and give your name of your book and your websites or anything like that you want to let the listeners know about.
Yeah, the book's Children of the Grays, and I have a website, www.childrenofthegrays.com. Got more information about the book there. Got a book trailer on there you can find out. I write a blog on there, just started. And you can find that on Amazon. I've priced it very reasonable. You know, I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it to help people. And so I tried to make it very reasonable to get. And my contact information is on the website and also on in the book. And Guy, I appreciate it. It was a great, very quick 2 hours, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man, it was great. And, you know, I really want to get you on next month with Sasha because she is an abductee. And
Yeah, we had some email interchanges and stuff. And, yes, it's really unfortunate that she couldn't make it tonight. So I'd love to come back.
And I really want you two to have a conversation. And, you know, she's going to add quite a bit more to the conversation, you know, so all right, dude, thank you very much. And we will see everybody in probably 2 weeks. And much love. Have a good night.